Coming up next on the Social Hour, we're going to talk about Batkid, who's saving Gotham City as Amber and I go through our show. Plus, did Snapchat really turn down $3 billion? And what about a smartphone for kids that looks like a toy? We'll talk about all that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is the Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 137, recorded Friday, November 15th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 1 million high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SocialHour1113. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a fun-filled edition of The Social Hour. Working from my world headquarters in San Francisco, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I'm in Toronto, Ontario, and I am in my little studio. Everything is great, Sarah, and it's nice to see you in a different place. Usually it's me who's floating around.
Yeah, exactly. I am working from my home office, where some people who watch Tech News Today may recognize this little area. But yeah, my car is getting some diagnostics work. Ooh, fun and fancy. So, you know, the beauty of our show is that we can be social from pretty much anywhere as long as we have an internet connection. So the show goes on as usual.
It does. You know, Sarah, I was just thinking about you the other day because I'm sending Chris and another camera guy that works with us and another guy I know out to San Francisco next week. And there are no hotel rooms because I guess it's Dreamforce.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
It's crazy. There are no hotel rooms. So I've been going on Airbnb looking for different places and haven't had much luck yet. Anyway, I was thinking about Sarah. I was like, is it okay if three guys come crash at your house?
Of course. I've got a big couch. They can work it out. Absolutely. Anytime. But it's kind of a crazy day. There's helicopters flying overhead, which we will get to in a minute. But we should probably start off with... there's quite a bit of tragedy over in the Philippines. Thank goodness social media comes to the rescue.
Yeah, this is an interesting article on newscientist.com, and it talks about how technology is being used, not just in the Philippines, but also in places where there are have been disasters in the past. And one interesting thing they talk a lot about is this tool called Micro Mappers, and it's based on a global network of volunteers who literally sift through all of the message on social media that they find in places where there are disasters, and they map that information as best they can, including putting images up there so people get a sense of those disaster areas where people are asking for help. And it's just neat to see how social media is being used during a disaster like this and how there are opportunities to go out and help people. And I know people are going to say, well, not everybody has cell phones, but for the people who do have cell phones and they are sending messages out, I mean, they talk about tweet mining in this article and a lot of interesting things happening.
You know, it's interesting. They also talk about OpenStreetMap, which is a community added to like a Wikipedia style project for obviously mapping, and that volunteers are keeping maps up to date so that people can figure out, yeah, like certain areas, how to navigate through and get to people who need help. Let's see, what was the number? 770,000 edits of map as of Monday of this week. That helps volunteers fill in roads and details that aren't available on published maps, which is also, I mean, that's amazing.
It's phenomenal.
It's one of the best reasons that social media even exists is to help in situations like this.
It sure is. And I think what's interesting about this, too, is not just that we have the technology to allow us to get this information, but the people who are experts at analyzing the information. I mean, I'd think back to school and think, wow, I would love to go into some type of analytics in terms of understanding how to take information and put it into context and into a format that would help in a situation like this. So there are experts who are mining all of that data and figuring out what to do with it. So it's good to see, obviously, that being one way that people are helping. I know there are many other ways. But for the purpose of this show, I thought it was kind of an interesting article, and we'll put a link to it in our show notes.
Absolutely. You know what we'll also link to is, all right, I mentioned that there were helicopters flying overhead, and some of you might be like, what is wrong?
What's happening?
It's a big day in San Francisco, Amber, and it's actually kind of fitting that I happen to be in San Francisco right now because I live pretty close to kind of what you'd call like the downtown area. And right now, as I speak, there is a little boy dressed up in a Batman costume going through and saving citizens of our fair city. What this is, if it makes no sense at all to you, and I mean, the city has completely shut down because of this, by the way. What this is a little boy, his name is Miles. I think he's 5. He asked the Make-A-Wish Foundation, he has leukemia, to basically, you know, let him be Batman. And there are so many people who ended up... The whole thing went viral. So many people that ended up saying, I want to volunteer, I want to donate. Let's basically give him the best Batman day of his life. They set up routes for him. He left his hotel downtown and then went to, it was like a cable car tracks where a woman who's, you know, basically she's sort of like an actor, right? Is like tied to the tracks, you know, with a canister of gasoline, you know, tied to her back saying, save me, Batman. And one of the citizens of the city donated an actual Lamborghini to be outfitted like a Batmobile for the day so that our Bat kid could ride around. And I mean, it is one of the most adorable things you've ever seen because, you know, it's really clearly the best day of his life. But I mean, I'm floored by how many people have come out. I mean, it's like we're watching a parade. I mean, there's like thousands of people playing hooky to watch this kid. And I mean, the whole thing is all orchestrated. He's at AT&T Park right now. That's where the San Francisco Giants play in order to save our mascot, Lucille, from the penguin. I mean, it's really something. So between Instagrams and Vines, there's a live feed with some of our local news stations right now. Amber, what do you make of this?
You know, it's interesting. I've been off Twitter for most of the day, so I didn't know about it. So when I read it in the rundown, I wasn't quite sure. So I thought I would just wait to see what it was. Sarah, I knew you had something interesting in store, but I could never have imagined anything this amazing. You literally gave me goosebumps when you were talking about it. I mean, what a phenomenal story for this little boy. And if people are listening to us just audio only, you should check out the video version and see, like you said, some of the Instagram pictures, the vines, and this adorable little boy dressed up as Batman running into all these different characters. I mean, this is the thing, you know, people complain all the time about the internet and social media and it's ruining our lives. And these are the type of stories that come out of it. So, amazing.
Yeah, it's great. And Brian, you can we look at the live feed? I don't know if anything's happening on at least one of the live feeds that are available. There are several of them. The news organizations, of course, are, yeah, see, okay, so that's AT&T Park. Where we've got an aerial, like, live view of what's happening right now as Bat Kid saves the mascot from the bad guys. It's really something. It's funny, Amber. Inevitably, as these things start gaining momentum, you know, and I mean, my Twitter feed is nobody's talking about anything else, even people who don't live in San Francisco for the most part. And then you kind of get your people saying, "Well, hold on a second, is this taxpayer money or?" Well, wait a second. What about all of the other kids who aren't going to get a bat day? And, you know, I guess I can understand that part of it. But as far as I'm concerned, this is just a really neat thing. And it sort of restores my faith in humanity.
Exactly. And you can't do that. I mean, you can't take away from this child's joy because not every child gets it. I mean, the reality is this is one boy's little wish and it is coming true today. So, and you know what? If anyone complains out there about having problems in their city, come to Toronto, okay? That's a challenge because it keeps getting worse here. And I would love it if something like that happened here because it's just ugly. So,
well, you know what you need, Amber? You guys need Bad Kid. We got to get Bad Kid up to take your mayor out somewhere. And
I love it.
Give him a talking to.
I think that's a fact. You know what, Bad Kid, if you're watching, I will pay for your ticket to fly up here and we will throw a big parade party for you. So, yeah, it's a fabulous story. And I mean, it's so cool to see people coming together like that. But you know what, Sarah? I think you live in a very special place as far as social media, because although I think it would happen to some extent in other cities, in San Francisco, it just feels like, you know, everything always lines up perfectly for this type of thing.
Absolutely. And I think to anybody who says, well, you know, you're shutting down the city and is this really the best use of money? This is all about, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, we want kids not to have leukemia. But I think that a foundation like Make-A-Wish, which is a great foundation. I mean, if you're not familiar with that organization, there are a lot of angels working there. But all this does is bring awareness to the cause. And when people realize that, wow, you really do good work there, they're going to get more donations. So I don't think that there's any way to look at this as not a win for science and warm fuzzies that we feel within us because of this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Speaking of people donating money, clearly Snapchat has more money than they need because apparently, according to reports that came out this week, Sarah, on Wednesday, they turned down an offer for about $3 billion from Facebook. These are reports that are circulating around the internet. And some investors, based on the Smashable article, valuing that startup at $4 billion. So we've come into a bubble-like phase once again.
Oh, we sure have. You know, I think if I'm being honest, I understand that when co-founders like the founders of Snapchat have a vision and believe in it, and really, you know, you could say this about any entrepreneur. It doesn't even have to be an app, but if you really believe in your product and the future of it, you know, it's possible that you can't put a price on it. You don't want to sell no matter what you're going to be offered. That said, $3 billion, if this is true, because of course the story is that they turned it down, not that they took it. So it's kind of hard to know what really happened behind closed doors. But if true, they must really have a great business plan, because that's a fantastic exit for something that really, I mean, I don't know if Snapchat is just getting started or if it's already waning in popularity. It seems very gimmicky to me. I use it. I like Snapchat. I think it's really, really fun, but I don't see it as, you know, the next big thing that, you know, will dictate the way that we all communicate with each other. I think it's just interesting and new.
Yeah, I find it so frustrating all the time when I hear stories like this, Sarah, because we know in 2 years, you and I could be talking about the story that, remember the day that Snapchat was offered $3 billion from Facebook and they were just sold for $500,000? And those stories happen all the time. And I can't think it's anything more than just simply greed. I mean, at that point, that much money, I mean, you can do whatever you want, right? And to me, I don't get it. You know, what are you waiting for? I'm sure there's a feeling that you want to keep your baby and, you know, let it grow and build the company. But at the end of the day, the opportunities, if you get that type of cash flow, are just phenomenal. So I don't understand it at all. Makes no sense.
I don't either. I don't know. I don't know what any of this means anymore, Amber. I mean, I thought 1 billion was crazy for Instagram, even though I love Instagram. It's probably my favorite app ever. Mm-hmm. But that seemed, it just, these valuations are so, you know, it really kind of has become, it's almost like patent wars. I almost liken it to that, where it's a company like Facebook is like, Snapchat is really interesting and it's hard to say where it's going to go. But we're Facebook, so if we've got the money, maybe we just buy it and figure it out later so that nobody else does. That's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't get it. You know, it's one of those things where I can't even understand how you could turn that down. But we are going to talk about the trend of disappearing media later on in the show, Sarah, for our social marketing review or spotlight or read. So talk about how that's becoming more and more popular. And obviously Snapchat is really leading the way on that one.
Well, yeah, it absolutely is. And it's fun too. In fact, Amber, you and I ought to be Snapchat friends. I could send you lots of cat photos and
yes,
just, you know, fun stuff that I do throughout the day.
I'll send you dog photos of the dog I'm babysitting this weekend. And
perfect. Yeah.
It's all good.
Lots of snaps. You know, it's funny. A friend of mine, stop me if I've told the story already. She went to this Kanye West concert a few weeks ago. And I had wanted to go, and the tickets are really expensive. And so I just kind of dropped the ball and I didn't go. And she sent me Snapchat video, like just a few seconds every few minutes. And I felt like I was able to sort of enjoy the concert.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It was fun. I mean, it was on my end. I was like, this is so fun because I know this is basically real time. I mean, yeah. I guess it probably made her a little bit distracted, but I appreciated it. It was fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. Okay, so another thing that's fun, and I know you've been getting into this more and more, Sarah, is using Pinterest, because we've talked about it on the show in the past. And a lot of buzz this week about Pinterest launching its first API and launching it with a bunch of big brands who have come on board, like Zappos, Walmart, Disney, just to name a few. And if end users are wondering what this will allow them to do or allow them to see, for the most part, one of the big benefits is that these brands will be able to post a list of the most pinned items. So let's say it's Walmart, for example, they'll be able to have a list on their website of the most pinned products. So they've never been able to have information kind of fed back to them like this before. So I think it opens up a really big opportunity. And we've talked about this before on the show, where Pinterest just continues to be growing and growing. And particularly with retailers, I think it changes the digital conversation a lot.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I can see top pins. They also mention things like most recently pinned. And this would be something, yeah, let's say your Pottery Barn, you know, your furniture store. You can kind of see, basically, it's like what's trending, really, of your products. And I think it'll be interesting to see how this is done really well. Because I guess there's a part of me who's like, well, I mean, do I really care who else has pinned this stuff? But the truth is, I really do. That's something that Pinterest does just natively when I'm on Pinterest, does really well, where if I end up looking at, I don't know, it's like a certain kind of mirror, right? And it, you know, other people have pinned this, and then you kind of get interested in, oh, well, there are other Pinterest users that kind of have my same taste when it comes to a mirror I might hang on my wall. Let's see what else they've got. And then it's like other people who've pinned this mirror also pinned these other things. So I think especially for retailers, for people who are selling stuff, this could be really great.
Yeah, I do think it just changes the conversation. I think it makes Pinterest more and more important in that conversation around retailers and how they can benefit from social media. And Sarah, I have to wonder, I mean, what does this do to Facebook? I mean, there was a point where Facebook was kind of the cool kid in town when it came to marketing in the retail space, and Pinterest has just kind of totally pushed them aside. So again, you go back to how quickly things like this can happen, and it doesn't take long. Within 6 months, you know, Pinterest is the kind of the number one social network out there, I would argue, for retailers, at least in the sense that it's up and coming.
Sure. And how long until, you know, there's the idea that, well, I mean, I was going to say, how long until you don't really need to go to Pinterest? It's just sort of baked into the appropriate experiences online. But you could say that about Twitter too. I mean, Twitter's API is widely used by many, many, you know, third-party apps and services. And Twitter.com is still definitely a destination, but it'll be neat to see how Pinterest does evolve, rather than just like, oh, it's a place to scrapbook. It'll be baked into a lot of experiences. I mean, you could even think of pinning something as, you know, an article that people like. That doesn't really work on Pinterest right now. In fact, in a minute, we're going to talk a little bit about Pinterest, what Pinterest isn't good for, but I don't know. We'll have to see. It's kind of like that, you know, that Pinterest fire hose of data.
Yeah, it definitely is. So you found a neat article about news use across social media platforms, and it's interesting. I feel like these stats kind of surprised me as far as the places where people are sharing the most news, or maybe I should say how users are sharing different information across different social networks.
Yeah, and I mentioned Pinterest is one thing that this is a Pew Research study that polled a little over 5,000 people on where they consume news on social media. So this is specific to, it's not people who are saying, well, I don't watch news on TV anymore. It's just people saying, yeah, I'm on Reddit and this is why I use Reddit is to, you know, consume news, that sort of thing. Pinterest is way down at the bottom. There's 11 social media sites. You've got Reddit, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, Tumblr, YouTube, MySpace, LinkedIn, Instagram, Vine, and Pinterest. It's funny. A couple weeks ago, I would have been like, Vine is definitely not a place to get news. But that's not true because there's Gingercast, which I have talked about on a episode of The Social Hour in the past. Pinterest, of course, not really a place to consume news. That doesn't surprise me much. But I was a little surprised, and we talked about this on TNT this morning, by YouTube at about 20%. That's higher than I would think. Now, obviously, there's plenty of news that you can consume on YouTube, but I don't think I would ever say that I go to YouTube for that reason. You know, I'm usually just following little links to stuff. I don't hang out on YouTube very much. Reddit, 62% of people said not only are they on Reddit, but they're on Reddit because they want to hear about what's going on. Twitter, of course, Twitter and Facebook are both they're about half, 47% and 52% for Twitter. So that makes sense. But I think there's always that sort of ongoing conversation, Amber, that I have with other people. And that's, you know, are these places to consume news? Leo is always saying, oh, Twitter's just a place to broadcast stuff. And I don't know that's not necessarily true for me, but it's certainly a place that I do consume news. And I'm sort of surprised that it's neck and neck with people on Facebook because I think of Twitter as much more of a breaking news source than Facebook.
You know, I think the key word there is breaking news. And I only say that because I'm curious about their definition of news, because I think of exactly like you said, with Twitter, it is breaking news. With Facebook, I find it almost like sensational news. I don't know if it's the people that I'm friends with, but some of the news on Facebook, it really, the quality is not the greatest. And it seems like different social networks maybe have different types of news. And I don't know if the article really breaks it down in that way, but I'd be curious to see how people define news in the context of those different social networks, because I think that would really change the conversation. Because when you get to breaking news, I mean, Twitter's got to be at the top of the list, and I can't imagine anyone else competing with them.
Yeah, it's also funny because you have to take into consideration how many people are on these social networks. I mean, Facebook's the biggest social network. This is, by the way, this is just polling people in the U.S. So it's, you know, it's a sample of the population, but it's U.S. only. In the U.S., I mean, it's like half the people in the U.S. are on Facebook. And then of those people, how many of them say that they're on Facebook for news? So you do get, you know, it's the numbers are a little bit different depending on how big the network is, but again, yeah, for Facebook, it's a startlingly large number, considering that of the general population, so many people are on the network.
Yeah, sometimes my Facebook news feed feels like, or no, I shouldn't say news feed, the Facebook news that I see on the platform, it feels a little, like I said, very sensational to me. I just wanted to mention a tweet we got from Richard Lalonde, who's watching, who says that Twitter is a place to listen and engage, obviously, as well as news. So I would agree with that. I do a lot of listening to what's happening, especially on a micro level, Sarah, in terms of news in my neighborhood. I'll search for the name of my neighborhood all the time, and that's the way I'll get news about what's happening here. And sometimes I don't interact with it at all. But I do listen a lot, and that's a big part of it, I think.
Yeah, totally. It's I was at dinner last night and with a couple friends, and we were talking about our mothers, our wonderful mothers, and it was like all three of us have moms that are on Twitter but really don't ever tweet. But we know that they're lurking and following our lives on Twitter. So
yes, I have one of those as well.
it's a place to consume. It's a place to blast out. It's what you make of it. Quick reminder for everybody who might not be watching us live and would like to in the future. We record the Social Hour live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Although I should say after the first of the year, we're in November. Let me look at my schedule and make sure I get the day right. On Thursday, January 9th, we will debut the Social Hour at our new time, which is 11 a.m. Pacific on Thursdays, 2 p.m. Eastern. And that's going to be our time slot going forward. So please make a note of it, although the Twit calendar will be updated as well. But of course, if you want to keep up with us, we love having you watch live, but you can watch on demand however you like on a mobile device or a big TV with your Apple TV, whatever you want to do. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. That's where when we say we'll put an article in our show notes, this is what we're talking about. This is where all of our episode archives live. And in each episode, we've got links to all of the good stuff. So if you're looking for something to pass along to a friend, or you want to read it in greater detail, that's where you find it all. Our subscription links are on each episode page too. And of course, if you have feedback about anything, you can get a hold of us a variety of ways, but one of the easiest is to email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, Amber, let's take a quick break and thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love Shutterstock.com because you can find the perfect image or video. It's not just images, it's videos too, for a very creative project. Oh, there's a kitty. That's so funny. I thought it was my own cat. And I was like, why does Sam look so small?
I thought that was your cat. Is that a Shutterstock video that they're... Oh, I really thought
Brian,
that was your
hysterical
cat.
Well, because I have a black cat, Sam. Some of you see him. He sits over here sometimes. But no, this is, if you need a virtual cat that seems very real, Shutterstock is absolutely the place to go. Oh, that's so funny. Brian, you're so funny. Whether it's for a website or a publication, you want to make some sort of a video. Obviously, we can do sort of like green screen effects here, superimposing. This is, I mean, really amazing stuff. I mean, sometimes I just like hang out on Shutterstock looking at videos and thinking, what would I use this video for? It can almost help you think of a project because They have more inventory than you could ever even get through. In fact, Shutterstock is adding over 12,000 video clips each week. That's insane. They have over 1 million video clips, in fact. And I mean, obviously the number is growing. So every time you visit, if you've got an account, you're going to find something new. It's not going to seem sort of stagnant. Also, Shutterstock has really sophisticated search tools. So if you know what you're looking for really specifically, you can go ahead and search by keyword, but maybe you're kind of just in a mood or you're looking for something that is supposed to evoke some sort of an emotion. You know, maybe you're putting together an advertisement. I mean, corgis, they make me happy, right? So you can search by a variety of ways. And then as you find video assets, you can save them to a clip box. Maybe you just want to be organized, or maybe you're working with a team and that's something that you can direct them to later on, saying, look at some of the clips that I saved in our clip box. And it's good to collaborate as well. You can choose between just a single individual clip or video packs. You can download those clips in HD and add them to your project. You can save them with standard def or web formats as well as HD. And you can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. You don't need a credit card. Just start an account. Start using Shutterstock, help imagine what your next project could be like, save some videos. And then when you decide to purchase, if you're like, oh, I can't live without it now, this is awesome, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1113. That's SOCIALHOUR1113. And new accounts will receive 25% off any package. So whatever package you want, that's fine. You still get that 25% off. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 25% off new accounts, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1113. And thanks to Shutterstock, as always, for being our friend and our sponsor. All right, Amber, what is up with our app of the week? Because it is flu season and
it is.
Apparently you've got a solution.
Well, you know what? We mentioned this on the show before. This is actually it's a Facebook app that is run by a company called Sick Weather. Now, I thought I would mention it again on the show because I know that they've updated it. So it has new features and functionality. And the idea is pretty basic. It scans your Facebook friends to figure out which ones have posted about potentially having the flu or being sick. And it gives you an overall sense of who you should stay away from. So kind of a handy thing, I think, as we get, like you said, in season and want to be able to figure out, you know, places we should go, places we shouldn't go. They, even if you go to Sick Weather, they have an interactive map as well that shows you literally like a heat map as far as the places where There are a lot of cases of the flu. So a very, very useful thing. I mean, I don't think it's perfect because not everybody broadcasts that they have the flu, but I think it is kind of interesting. They even have remedies as far as what you should do if you have the flu and types of things that you can take. And yeah, just kind of a neat little social health tool.
I think that's great. I mean, I guess they can also pull data from, you know, instances of people going and getting Theraflu from a pharmacy and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's a little bit of people talking about it, but also, it's, you know, collaborative data from, you know, medical facilities plus people saying, oh, I have the flu. You know, I've been thinking about the flu more than ever because I hate to admit it, but I don't always get a flu shot and I usually mean to. And sometimes the season kind of comes and goes and I go, oh yeah, I never did that and I never got sick. But a friend of mine just had a baby like 3 days ago. And I went over to visit her and they said, can you get a whooping cough vaccination before you come over? And I was sort of like, really? Because it's one of these things that's sort of going around. And when you've got, you know, especially like an infant or somebody who's older, has a compromised immune system, this stuff becomes really, really important. It's not just about, oh, I was sick for a few days. And so something like a Facebook app that helps people who, I mean, that's of the utmost concern is health, stay away from areas that might be problematic is great.
Yeah, I think it's really handy. So just one you can check out. Let us know if you've had any luck with it, if it's helped you avoid the flu. Because like I said, I'm sure there's some people who post about having the flu. Some people, maybe they keep going to work and infecting other people. Those people are out there. We know who you are. So a good one to check out. I also wanted to mention this quick little social media tip. And I don't know about you, Sarah, but sometimes we've talked about this, about our particular thumbnail when we post the Social Hour to YouTube. Sometimes the thumbnails are good. Sometimes we're looking goofy. But I didn't really think about it being kind of an art of the thumbnail as far as how it could help you market your video on YouTube until I got sent a link to this website or webpage on the YouTube account called Thumbnail Optimization. I didn't know this, but they have an entire section on YouTube that is dedicated to creating thumbnails and the strategy behind creating thumbnails, why it's important, how to do it, even as far as the specs, close-up of faces work, talks about general guidelines when you're shooting your own photo. And it talks about how every time you go out to create your own video, you should shoot a separate photo that you can use as a thumbnail instead of just taking a screen grab. So I think really helpful for people who want to maximize their YouTube presence. And I know it's so competitive on YouTube right now to get attention. And hopefully this can help out a little bit.
I love it. I think the whole thumbnail choosing thing is it's underrated, I guess, how important it is. And this is, I mean, it goes for YouTube or Vimeo or Instagram or a lot of other places that you would be asked to choose some sort of a what are we looking at, Brian? Whatever it is, I don't know.
The Social Hour thumbnails.
The Social Hour thumbnails, very nice. Yeah, it's basically just terrible photos of me, but great. Yeah, I think having that extra shot it makes a lot of sense. And I think very few content creators, even ones who know how to put together a nice video and use a camera and everything, don't think about that, Amber, because it's like, oh, well, you're supposed to choose a thumbnail from a video, some sort of a screenshot. But that's not necessarily the case. You can make something a little bit more compelling and be able to set it up a little bit to illustrate, okay, well, this is what this video is going to be about. I mean, even if there was a video of me interviewing you and we could take a screenshot from the interview, or it could be the two of us, you know, maybe the interview, you're done and we take a nice photo together and that becomes the thumbnail, sort of like, here's a sneak peek of how this video is, you know, going to make you feel. So I think it's something that people should look at, particularly if they're making YouTube videos.
Yeah, I just am in the middle of doing a series for a company. It's all about the future of shopping, the future of retail. And I'm going to go and talk to the client and see if they can change some of the thumbnails, because I was looking at them and thinking sometimes it's just a random screenshot. And I think we could do a better job of getting a really cool thumbnail image. And I do think it's a big deal, Sarah. When I go on YouTube and I'm scanning through all of the different videos that are there, I mean, the first thing I see are interesting thumbnails and I'll click on them. So it's a tiny thing, but it can make a big difference.
And absolutely.
Just more work for everybody to do, basically. That's what the show is all about.
Yeah, exactly. Now you got to research your thumbnails. We don't want to see any wimpy thumbnails, everybody. They got to be good. You get people to click. In fact, you know what? I'm going to use our episode last week as an example of a thumbnail that I don't actually think is very good. It's interesting, but it's if you go to the Social Hour 136 from last week on our website, twit.tv/TSH, it's a sort of weird thumbnail. I don't know if you can get it up or not, but no, it's just the thumbnail on our page, not the actual video. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's a thumbnail I wouldn't have chosen, and maybe we'll all watch the YouTube thumbnail generation.
Subtle, Sarah. Anyway. It's true.
Well, you guys can go look at it yourself later on.
I know.
All right, let's move on to the social marketing read of the week. This is a category I've never even heard of.
I just keep making up categories on the show, Sarah. I hope you're okay with that. But I thought this was interesting because we have talked so much about Snapchat, this whole idea of disappearing media. So there was this article on adage.com, which explains to marketers why they should understand this trend, why this trend is going to grow, and how it's important to them. Because think about it, for advertisers, they're used to having media that is there and it kind of sticks over time. It doesn't go anywhere. But all of a sudden, with this trend of disappearing media with Snapchat, they may need to reevaluate the way that they are pushing out ads and marketing to people. So for the social media marketers who are listening or watching this show, I think it is a great read just to understand, you know, this trend that really kind of switches up the way that we have traditionally sent out advertisements.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Amber, what's kind of the latest on social media? You know a lot more, I feel, about the marketing side of social media than I do. Particularly, mm-hmm. I mean, you wrote a book about it. And what do you think is kind of the latest and the greatest as far as the thinking behind this?
I think the biggest buzzword or stories I hear about are not necessarily about disappearing social media, but instead about storytelling back into marketing. And what I mean by that is that the branded content push, people creating branded content series where you don't even know perhaps that a brand is behind a documentary series that may go out on YouTube, or a brand is behind maybe even a movie, or a brand is integrated into video content. So I think just the whole storytelling trend, which shouldn't really be a trend because obviously storytelling has been around forever, but I do think more and more brands are figuring out a way to kind of soft sell, not so much the hard sell, but you know, maybe it's like Coca-Cola decides to do a documentary about travel and you end up that it's sponsored by Coca-Cola, but you never see them in the series. So that to me, I think a lot of brands are trying to get to that point.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I think so. Yeah. It'll be weird to see, you know, the idea that ads don't belong in an app like Snapchat. That makes sense to me, right? Because you want something that's lasting. But then what happens? It's like, where does it go? So much revolves around advertising. I mean, it's that's the way. I mean, much of the web is run. And so what do you do?
Exactly. But Sarah, think about it. A little while ago about a fashion brand, and I can't remember the name of it, but they were using Snapchat, I believe, at one of their fashion shows, and they would ask people to sign up for Snapchat and they would send them quick pictures from the runway, and those obviously would disappear over a certain amount of time. So brands seem to get their sticky little fingers into everything that people do, even if it is something like disappearing social media. They figure out a way to latch onto it. Look at Vine. I would say that Vine, I mean, it's a great example of how we thought at first, how are brands going to use this? And we have so many examples. We mentioned Best Buy a few months ago, I think, in terms of how they were using it for a series called College Cuisine. So more, mm-hmm. I think brands are, they get into, whether you like it or not, they get into everything. And I'm coming at it from a side of, hey, I'm a marketer in some ways, but also as a user. And sometimes it feels intrusive to me.
Yeah. I at the same time, I can see where, I mean, almost in the vein of like a subliminal message, something like Snapchat being a really interesting way to advertise and market a product to people, because especially because Snapchat, the whole thing is, oh, well, if somebody sent me something, they may have only set it to like 3 seconds or even 1 second or 5 seconds. So I kind of have to like pay a lot of attention for a very short amount of time, because once it's gone, it's gone. So if you've got an ad in there that's maybe inserted right before the Snapchat that you're about to look at, I mean, you are as captive of an audience as you can be. And that's mm-hmm. not necessarily something that I want to see, but that could be yeah. extremely powerful.
Yeah, no, I agree. It could be extremely powerful. So I think the interesting thing is the rate of change right now in terms of different social networks and social media tools. I mean, literally, it feels like the lifespan of something like Snapchat can be pretty short. That's why I say they should sell, Sarah.
Oh my gosh,
knows?
I know.
6 months, it's like see something else.
Exactly. It's like $3 billion, guys. I mean, you've won. You've already won. But I know it's not all about money. It's just with numbers like this, Amber, I'm like the private jets. You could organize another bad kid celebration in Toronto with money like that.
You could organize 100 of them. I mean, how can
100 million of them? Yeah,
I don't get it. I'll never understand it. But then again, I've never been faced with that dilemma.
Exactly. I know. True. Maybe if it were us, we'd say, 3 billion sounds a little low. You know, eventually we'll get there. Well, we got an email from Brad, who is, he actually, his company made a instructional video for an app that he wanted us to look at. He says he loves the show. He's been listening since episode one. Thank you, Brad. And he said, I wanted to share a mobile app that just got released. It's for college students to stay better connected, contented, and organized. My company, Loose Keys, did the animation video for the service. We'll put his video in our show notes too, because it's really, really good. But yeah, the idea is that if you are particularly in college, although it doesn't have to be for college people, but you're in some sort of an organization, let's say, you know, like the math league or a sorority or some sort of an organization that's got, you know, like maybe 100 plus members. How do you use something on your smartphone that helps keep people organized, conversations happening, that goes a little bit beyond something like, I don't know, a Facebook message group, or trying to do it via text, or, you know, God forbid, some sort of a long email chain with, you know, 100 different recipients. Now, I am not in college, nor do I belong to an organization that has, I mean, my potluck group is like 10 people. That's about as big as any of mine get. But I think that this idea is pretty compelling. Amber, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's really compelling. I think it's interesting to see a tool like this. It makes sense. Like you, Sarah, I'm thinking I'm not in college, but if I were in college, I would probably use something like this. It sounds pretty neat. Did we have the video? Did he send it as well?
He did. He sent the video. It's very good. I don't know if it's as descriptive as
okay
we need for our audience, because it's like this really cute animated sort of like a story about zombies on college campus, and they were having a mixer. Or something. Anyway, we'll put it in our show notes. But yeah, if you go to quadapp.com, it tells you a little bit more about the app. And I know that we have people of all ages who watch and listen to the Social Hour. So it's worth looking into. And I would love to know if anyone is using this effectively and loves it, because, you know, even though I really like apps and I play around with a lot of them, you know, sometimes, and by the way, this is on iOS and Android. So you can go nuts if you're at least on either of those operating systems. But a lot of times I sort of go, well, that's cool, but I'd really like to hear firsthand who thinks that this is an indispensable tool, because it's clearly not really made for me. But I thought we should pass it along anyway. Quadapp.com.
Yeah. Very cool. Sarah, next up we have our meme of the week. And this is a really heartwarming story. It seems like we have a few of these this week. This one is about a content creator who has been living with cancer, and a Ryan Gosling meme that he made up has been helping him get through it. So this 25-year-old filmmaker lives in Glasgow, Scotland, and he started this meme called Ryan Gosling Won't Eat His Cereal. And this is a And it's a 6-second video, and I'll explain it for audio listeners, where people hold up a spoon to Ryan Gosling's mouth. And at the very last minute, he appears to reject it because he kind of turns away. So they're getting little video snippets clearly off any YouTube videos that are online. And they hold the spoon up to the video and to his mouth, and then he kind of turns. It sounds silly when you're explaining it now that I think about it, but I think in video form it gets kind of fun for his
life. It is so weird.
It is so weird.
It's so weird.
So how do you think of these things? Interesting thing is, for this particular person, he has made about 20 of these videos and has said that it has really connected him with other people on Vine. But while he's been going through a really hard time, in fact, that he has more than 200,000 followers on Vine, which is a phenomenal number. And a lot of people just really participating in the fun and keeping his spirits up as well. So always nice to see a story like this. And some of his fans have started an Indiegogo campaign, or started one for him that ended in September, where they raised a bunch of money for him as well.
It's so funny. I mean, these clips, I can't stop. It's so weird. Ryan Gosling, what is it about him that's so memeable? I mean, this guy, it just works with him, doesn't it?
I don't know. I was just going to say the same thing, because there have been so many memes with Ryan Gosling. It's just something about him. I cannot quite figure it out. But you're right. And the thing is, I have to tell people who are listening to the audio version, you should look up the video, get a link to it on in our show notes. Because the first time you see someone taking the spoon and moving it towards his mouth where he's about to eat it, the cereal, and then he rejects it, it seems silly. And then you watch more and more and it gets funnier. I can't explain it.
It's really hysterical. And the fact that Ryan McHenry is also, I mean, he's you want to cheer him on as well, because he's obviously going through something kind of crazy, but it's great. It's absolutely awesome.
Yes. And now we have the poster of Ryan Gosling. It says, I won't eat cereal. So people have taken the meme, not just to Vine, but to other levels as well.
I feel like I would frame that and put it on my wall. I would do that. That's how much I like this. And when somebody comes over, they'd say, I won't eat cereal. And I would just laugh and say, you know, it's this cool internet thing. You don't get it.
You could then Snapchat me the picture, and then I would be the only one who understood, along with people watching on the show. I like it. You know what? It would be a real challenge, and I don't know if anyone's up for it, but if anyone who is listening wants to join into the fun and do a Vine like this, or that you have your own meme that you've created, let us know, because we're always up for a few laughs, especially for a great cause on the show.
We sure are. Lots of good causes on this show. We love hearing from you as well. If you know of... It's funny. Some people in our chat room right now are just like, memes are weird. I don't get it. Sometimes they're not meant to be get. Remember the Doge thing from last week? That was really bizarre. But, you know, took it and ran with it. Hey, why not? Oh, that was the screenshot I was talking about. I don't think that's our best screenshot. I think somebody needs to go to YouTube thumbnail school.
Yes, they do. Because it
doesn't make
a lot
of sense.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I know what's going on there, but if you're just watching the show for the first time, you don't know. That's just not, it's not our best work. We admit it. But we do want to hear from you. If you have feedback for us, tips and tricks, article that you'd like for us to look at, you want to send us a video, anything, you can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. Somebody called in, Amber, this week and sort of like breathed heavily. That's not really the kind of voicemail that we're looking for. Something where, you know, you're giving us feedback or something like that is much appreciated. Or of course, wow, if you want to record a video, just send us the link to the video somewhere. And thanks in advance. Of course, Amber is really good and diligent about following Twitter during the show. So if you are responding to us, which I know a lot of people do, and in hopes that we'll see it, we try to monitor everything live as well. Of course, we've got our chat room. So any way that you want to communicate with us, we appreciate it. All right, before we get to Rad or Fad, let's take a moment to thank SAP, our second sponsor, for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Anybody who listens or watches The Social Hour on a regular basis knows that we love social media solutions because we know how many of you may work at a large enterprise and be in charge of the social media aspect of connecting to your customers, making sure that your customers have quality customer service, that you're listening to their complaints, that you're helping answer questions. It's hard to do that, though. I mean, we talked about all the people who consume news on social networks. I mean, they're communicating with each other. They're passing along tips. They're telling people, you know, what to buy and what not to buy. And it can just be a big, big challenge to stay on top of that huge conversation. With social media solutions from SAP, large enterprises can stay on top of it and in a systematic way. It's set up really, really well. There's a listening component, which is searching the social web to know what's being said about your brand. So you're not sort of blindly doing, you know, a bunch of sort of random keywords and feeling like, oh gosh, you know, there's people are everywhere and they're on review sites or on Facebook and how could I possibly help everybody? That's the whole idea behind social media solutions, is to make it not overwhelming. It can surface sentiment about what your customers not only are talking about, but what seems to be resonating with them. What do they like? What do they not like? What from your competitors seems to be resonating with customers as well. So you can kind of think about future efforts. Helps you build better products that way. And then, of course, the engaging component helps you improve customer service and support because you get to set rules about, okay, there's a message about tech support. It goes to this member of my team. I'm going to go ahead and handle the people who have a question before they end up making some sort of a big purchase. You know, let's help them along. So you can keep things organized on your end as well. And then that helps you, because you're organized, respond to customer feedback rapidly, solve problems, drive sales. Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing by improving the customer service and support experience. Go to sap.com/twit. That's easy enough to remember. sap.com/twit. Take a guided tour to see for yourself how Social Media Solutions from SAP works. All right, Amber, it is Rad or Fad time. What do we got today?
Okay, this is kind of a cute one, and it's a Kickstarter campaign. I found this on TechCrunch, and it looks like a mailbox, and it's very cute, almost looks like a raccoon in some ways. And there is an app that goes along with it that allows parents to send messages to their kids from the app. So the child has the toy, for example, at home, and it's connected to Wi-Fi. The parent could be at work or traveling and send a message that would be waiting for the kid to listen to on the toy. Now, the first question in the TechCrunch article, Sarah, is why wouldn't you just get the kid a phone to call them? I would say, hey, I get it, because kids love toys, and they can also talk back into the little mailbox-looking like toy and send messages to their parents as well.
So
for kids.
Okay. Toy mail. Well, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. No. Okay. So it connects via Wi-Fi just in your home. So does it have to be on the same Wi-Fi network?
I don't know. That's a great question, because I was thinking in their video, it looks like actually the mom is away from home. She's somewhere else calling. Yeah. So I think only the toy has to be connected to the Wi-Fi network so the toy can get messages. But
okay.
My understanding is through the app that the parents could have, they obviously can be anywhere on a cellular network and they can talk to the toy.
I think that's pretty cute. I mean,
yeah,
I think there are probably a lot of kids who, you know, parents are used to them reaching for their phones and they love smartphones, and you hear about that all the time. And, you know, the kids they know how to unlock a phone and this and that. But yeah, I mean, kids also like toys, very much so. So I think that they're really adorable. The little toys themselves, the little animals.
The little mailbox. Yeah, I guess I mean, this one for me, I guess it's probably more personal in the sense why I would rate it as a rad, because I travel so much for work. And for instance, on Halloween, I was out in Vancouver and it would have been fun to send my little guy a message that he could get through it. Happy Halloween. Because even if, you know, I'm not going to send him an email, he doesn't have an email account, but if he had his own way of receiving messages that was just one of these cute little toys, then I think he would be totally into it. So I thought it was cute. I hope they get enough money, because right now, last time I checked on Kickstarter, they have about $13,000 and they're trying to get $60,000. So they have some work to do.
They do. Yeah. Well, I'm looking too. It's 169 backers and almost $13,000 raised, 16 days to go. But it's pretty cute. I like this. I mean, as many Kickstarter, I feel like it's few and far between that I see a Kickstarter and say, that seems stupid. Kickstarter projects, for the most part, I'm like, that's great. Let's do it. But this is a particularly cool one, especially because, yeah, it's, you can't really keep your kids from wanting to communicate. And why not use tools that you have and make it cute and kid friendly?
Yeah, I think it's kind of fun. And for people,
I think it's pretty rad, Amber.
Yeah, a lot of people want to get their kids away from screens. And I think this gives them an opportunity to do so.
Totally. Toy Mail, for anybody asking. That is the name of the project. And yeah, we will add the Kickstarter link to our show notes as well. Well, you know, we've come right in. I think we've come in under the hour mark, Amber. This was a really fun social hour. What's the latest on Bat Kid, Brian?
Bat Kid was running around on the streets, and then they're playing pre-recorded video from earlier, so I'm not sure where he's at right now.
I believe the city has been saved, and Bat Kid is getting his key to the city. And yeah, this is the key ceremony. By the way, there's like a huge mob at City Hall. Which again is not very far away from where I live right now, of people chanting Bat Kid, Bat Kid, helicopters are crazy. It is quite a spectacle here. I know you can't hear it, but I assure you, right outside my window, it's very exciting.
So cool. Such a great story. Cool. Yeah, I'm just checking on Twitter. There are so many tweets talking about this story. So it's just nice to read through all of them. It's very, very heartwarming. So it's a good story to end on.
Very good story to end on. I agree. All right. So speaking of ending, that is it for this episode of The Social Hour. Remember, for a limited time, we're still live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. If you'd like to tune in and experience the show as it unfolds. But of course, you can watch anytime you like. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. You can find our show in iTunes, subscribe to the show, watch or listen whenever you like. But we will be here at the same time next week. Amber, do you have anything crazy coming up until then?
I have one more speaking event on Monday, which means I've had, I think, 7 or 8 in the past couple of weeks. So after that, I am going to relax for a little bit. Nothing huge, Sarah. So looking forward to the show next Friday, and we'll...
Sounds good. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.